Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Horn Family Automotive Studios.
It's good Thursday. Thanks for being with us, Brad Sesmat, Sports360AZ.com, White Mountain Radio. Thanks to good people, White Mountain Radio. We're on Twitter at Brad Sesmat, C-E-S-M-A-T, to spell it out for you on this Thursday, 48 hours and change away from the big game at Sun Devil Stadium. Tomorrow we'll be doing the show out at ASU. Why not? We'll get out in the middle of all the students. Eric, what do you think the over-under is? Eric Sorensen, Senior Executive Vice President of Everything and Nothing on the show. What do you think the over-under is on us getting knocked off the air tomorrow? Over three times?
Oh, I don't want to come into this Thursday with a negative attitude, so I'm going to say zero.
What are you talking about, negative attitude?
Yeah, you're already talking about knocking off the air?
Yeah.
Come on.
We're going to be...
It's a live remote. That happens.
We're going to be out in the middle of the masses. And I'm working on a few things. You know, through the years, we've done some pretty stupid things doing this show through the years. I remember sitting in every seat in Chase Field before it became... before it was Bank One Ballpark. Sat in every seat, did it for charity. I ended up having to have surgery on my wrist. I tore a ligament from standing up and sitting down so many times. It's a true story. We did a fantasy baseball game over on the area which was a dirt lot when the Diamondbacks were first granted the franchise. We did the big guy turkey drive for years and years and years. We've done shows on cruise ships, got knocked off the air on cruise ships. We did a show from China once. So I'm thinking that tomorrow, doing a show down among, from what I've heard, the fans at ASU, the students, they have tents that have gone all the way around the activity center now. All the way around. So I've reached out to some people that have things. And when they have things, it means they show up unexpectedly and they just start handing things out. So we're going to have some fun tomorrow. I don't know exactly how that show's going to go. I know today I've got Jake Plummer coming up. Jake Plummer will be with us as always. Jake Plummer and the Fiesta Bowl, that's a winning combination. Always good to talk with Jake Plummer, especially now. The Pac-12 network analyst getting ready for Arizona State and Stanford. His view on the big game. Clark Judge, all things NFL. 30 years covering the National Football League. His view on the weekend games coming up. Carolina. Who would have thought Carolina, New Orleans would be must-see TV at the start of the year? But that's really what it's come to in the NFC. Also, Mike Tomlin, the drama with the officials. You know, Bruce Arians upset with the officials. So there's several different things around the NFL that we'll talk to Clark Judge about. And then Brock Huron is going to be with us, ESPN college football analyst. It's always good to catch up with Brock. The showdown in Tempe. Keys for both teams to punch their ticket to Pasadena, to the Rose Bowl. That's with Brock Huron. So busy show there. And now Eric has our Facebook question of the day to get us off and running.
Well, it's only fitting you mentioned tents. Because, yes, there are students out in front of and around, apparently, Wells Fargo Arena.
Yeah.
Camping out. And it's funny you should mention tents, Brad, because on my way home yesterday, I just happened to pass by. There's a new Chick-fil-A opening on 44th Street and Indian School.
I saw people camped out at the Chick-fil-A.
Exactly. They're camping out for a chance to get a year's free Chick-fil-A. It's not even a guarantee. It's just a chance.
Hey, honey.
Today's Facebook question is,
yeah,
what's the craziest thing you've done for great seats and or a great deal? Me personally,
yeah.
2007, my father and I. Black Friday, but not in Phoenix, in Prescott.
Ew.
So we sat in front of a Walmart at 3:30 in the morning.
A Walmart.
To get a laptop that was actually a very good deal that my parents actually, I think, still have.
Hey, Dad, let's go to Walmart.
My mom thought, you know what, you're crazy.
Let's go camp out at Walmart.
But my dad gets up at like 5 in the morning anyway, so for him, it was just setting the alarm a couple hours early.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the craziest thing.
Let me think. You live a pretty wild, wacky life.
Not really.
I got to tell you.
Not really.
Well, you're the same guy that would send a wedding announcement to Gary Patterson at TCU. So yeah, that's over the top. I camped out in 1984 when the Padres played the Cubs. You know, I was like 17 or something. I don't know. So he camped out at a stadium. Let me think, around the Super Bowl, there was really nothing there. I don't know. It's like I was saying earlier, did the whole stand up, sit down in every seat in Chase Field. That was pretty stupid.
Pretty stupid. In another life, I'm sure you remember this, you and I, well, you being the radio host and me being the radio producer, you decided it'd be a good idea to send me out with some really good Suns tickets back when the Suns were the end-all of end-alls.
Oh, you had stalkers. I remember this.
Yeah, I found myself in a Krispy Kreme bathroom and people pounding on the stall door to get the tickets.
And it was a girl, wasn't it?
A girl that came into the men's room. That's not something I did per se, but that's something I was a part of.
Yeah.
Facebook.com/sports360az. We always get sidetracked on this, so I'm just going to cut the conversation right
there. Oh, come on. I could go through story. There was a time where I think, Eric, this was the same one where did you crawl into a trunk of a car or you hit around a car lot? If I remember right,
I think I did that too. But the more memorable one was the one inside the Krispy Kreme bathroom.
And you were live on the air with the Krispy Kreme because I remember you screaming like a little girl. They're coming into the bathroom for these tickets.
It was so long ago. You paged me to call in the studio.
That is a long time ago. That was a long time ago. All right, let's get you caught up some things on my mind in the world of sports. Brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino in the beautiful White Mountains. Have you made your New Year's Eve plans yet? That's right. I'm here to help you out. Actually, the Honda Resort and Casino is here to help you out. New Year's Eve, that is the place to be at the Honda Resort and Casino. Think about it. With the weather in the state right now, you know there's more snow falling at sunrise. Sunrise, the great place to go ski. The Honda Resort and Casino, the great place to stay and have fun, pull down the slots, get warm at night, have a couple of warm drinks, eat some great food, have some fun at the tables. That's at the Honda Resort and Casino, the Honda Resort and Casino in the beautiful White Mountains. Jake Plummer in a couple of minutes. Well, I think today what people are buzzing about is this whole deal that Chris Cartman brought this up the other day about how the stadium is going to be neutralized. So this is more about ASU and Stanford. And if you haven't heard yet, there's people that are going over the top, out of control. Oh, my gosh. We're not going to be allowed to shoot off fireworks. We're not going to see Sparky and the bus step on the bus on the Jumbotron. We're not going to see any of this stuff. So Danette Layton of the Pac-12 office, the Pac-12 chief marketing officer said, quote, "Our job is to make sure we're neutral for both Arizona State and Stanford. We make it fair for players of both teams." Now, I would suggest to Danette Layton, who is the Pac-12 chief marketing officer, that maybe getting the games on DirecTV would help market the conference a little bit better. She's probably heard that one more than once. Secondly, I mean, I have no problems with fireworks and that not being there. Shoot them off for both teams when they run out on the field. Let's have a little bit of fun. I'm sure in the marketing budget somewhere, Larry Scott could say, you know, I got an extra $500 here for a couple sparklers. Let's make this happen. Sparky stepping on the bus. Why not just have the intro for both teams? How does Stanford, Eric, do we even remember how Stanford was introduced at their stadium? I think they just kind of wandered out there. They have the tree and they have the band.
Yeah, the tree was like dancing around. And they actually had a really live student section for the game. Remember, it was pouring rain and the students were standing out there in the rain.
Right,
about
they loved it.
2 hours before kickoff. But it was nothing that was super memorable as to how they entered the field.
They have a cool train sound when the team scores touchdowns. It's the old-fashioned train horn. I'm a train guy. I have model trains. It's one of my little things, okay? So, yeah, I have a little model train. There it goes around the corner. I know, it's creepy. But no, they have this train sound effect. Why not just make it when it's a home game for both teams? So when Stanford runs out on the field, they do what they do. When ASU comes out on the field, they do the sparks and they do the thunder and they have the band and they do what they do. Let them both do their thing. When Stanford scores a touchdown, somebody put the train sound effect on a little DVD and bring it in there down from up at Stanford. Plug it in and push play. It's not that hard to make this for both teams and jack up the stadium. It's really not that hard. Now, there is a pitchfork that's going to be at the center of the field. The weather doesn't sound like it's going to be anything to be remembered by in one sense. It's going to be football weather, which is great. If you're expecting to go out there and be all done up and have a great time, it doesn't sound like it's going to be the case. We're talking about mid-50s, low-50s at kickoff, good chance of rain. That sounds awesome to me. That sounds like a great time. That's what you want. If you go over now on my Twitter feed, at Brad Cesmat, C-E-S-M-A-T, if you go to my Facebook page, both have ways that you could win a pair of tickets that are around the 50-yard line, section 7, 30 rows up. We're going to keep it open just today, all right? And I'm going to draw out the name, and we'll send you a note if you win or not. So that's what's going around ASU and Stanford. There's an angle here I want to get to later in the show. There's six players on the Stanford roster that are making an impact. Six of them. One of them is Zach Hoffpar. We're going to hear from him a little bit later on, and he played over at Centennial. This is one of those games where ASU, because they haven't been able to close the borders, and yeah, they're having great successes here, but there's something bigger to this game, and that is being in a spot to say to Stanford potential recruits, why do you want to go there? Look at what we did to them. Here's Alden Darby on being one win away from the Rose Bowl. Alden Darby, ASU safeties, had a terrific season, one of the leaders on this team.
You know, growing up watching the Rose Bowl since I was a little kid, man, that right there would be a dream come true. And it'd mean a lot just to know that, I'm one of the very few that got to go to the Rose Bowl. And I know that there's so many people out there that are glad to have this opportunity. And for me to actually have the opportunity is just, it's amazing. So I'm going to do whatever it takes for us to, from my end, to help our team get there.
It's Alden Darby. On the other side, Jake Plummer, Pac-12 Network analyst. Every week, the Fiesta Bowl and Jake Plummer, a winning combination. Jake Plummer joins us next to talk about ASU and Stanford. I'm Brad Cesmat, Sports 360 AZ. And, of course, on White Mountain Radio, Twitter, lots of ways to consume the product. Hope you're having a great day.
Miller feeds it Carlos Hyde, right side to the 20, to the 15, to the 10. Hyde still chugging his way. He goes backwards to the 10, forward to the 5, dives for the end zone.
It's time to talk college football.
Underneath, they got a screen play. It's inside the 10-yard with the football. Touchdown, MSU. It's Richard Green again.
Taking you inside the huddle with ASU legend and Pac-12 Network studio analyst Jake Plummer. Presented exclusively by the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl.
Tipped off, and Lewis got it on the touchdown. Lewis is going to score.
Here again, Brad Cesmak.
Every week, Jake Plummer on the show with us, brought to you by the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl. The Tostitos Fiesta Bowl and Jake Plummer, that is a winning combination. Jake Plummer was on the sidelines for ASU and their win over the U of A. How many autographs did you sign that day?
Just a few. You know, it wasn't too bad. I was standing down in the end zone with my buddy Gus Farwell, and actually was next to Rudy Carpenter, another great issue quarterback. So we had a good time, and it wasn't a close game, but it was a dominating game, and you like to see ASU beat down their rivals like that.
Were you surprised with the ease that they went about beating down the U of A?
It's just the way they started. They started so fast. You could tell they were confident, and they knew they had a good game plan. They came out, and they were just flying around, and I think early in the third quarter, you know, U of A made that little bit of a push. It would have made it kind of interesting. And then, Robert Nelson had that pick six that was a huge play, big turning point in the game. I was surprised to see them on offense still, you know, maintain their explosiveness without Marion Grice, because Grice is one of the most explosive offensive players in the country, and they didn't miss a beat. It was nice to see DJ Foster get in there, local boy, get in and really have a great game.
I was surprised, Jake, that early in the game, in the first quarter in particular, Rich Rodriguez did not use Kadeem Carey that much, in particular the first couple of drives. Yes, he had a big day, and he's a terrific player, but from a strategy standpoint, did it surprise you Carey wasn't more involved early?
Yeah, I think when you have a running back like that, you don't just use him, sparingly. You use him all game long, and maybe it doesn't work early or it doesn't look as pretty, but, what you're doing in the first quarter with a running back like that is just setting up the ability to keep doing it later on in the game. And, I think just because they fell behind so fast, they had to kind of change their game plan a little bit and maybe thought they needed to throw the ball. And B.J. Dinker had been throwing the ball really well prior to that game. He just didn't look really confident against ASU, and that was definitely a compliment to ASU secondary. I think they get overlooked in the whole grand scheme of things, but they're playing really good ball.
Jake Plummer in the Fiesta Bowl every week with us. Jake Plummer in the Fiesta Bowl, winning combination, Pac-12 Network analyst. Appreciate Jake with Brad Cesmat every week. Breaking down ASU Stanford, And you look at how at the point of attack, the defense of ASU, but the ability of Stanford to just bash away on you behind Tyler Gaffney because they're so big. And I think if you look at point of attack, ASU defense, Stanford offense, is this where the game's going to be won and lost?
Yeah, I believe so. And then you can flip it too and say, you know, Stanford's defensive line front seven against ASU's front seven, which I think in the first meeting, the front seven for Stanford just dominated ASU's O-line. They're running a lot of pick stunts and a little bit of blitzes, and the ASU was just not, they weren't passing them off, they weren't keeping their heads up and doing the job they needed to do as an offensive line. But since then, ASU's O-line really has stepped it up. They've gotten a lot better at passing on those stunts. So that's going to be an interesting battle to watch. And then, like you said, the front seven for ASU, you know, having to go against those big boys for Stanford. And then that's what they do. It's the new age is zone read, but Stanford just is sticking to their guns and running the two tight end, two backs. If you can stop us, good luck. And if you do, we're going to go play action and go over the top. So it's going to be, you know, a big challenge for ASU's D-line. I think that, you know, Will Sutton's going to be getting double teamed, and the D-linemen are going to have to get body on a body, and then Chris Young, those linebackers, are going to have to fly around and come up and fill the gaps and definitely wrap up and make those tackles, whether it's a 3 or 4 yard gain, but just don't let them get any other extra yardage after the contact. And it's going to be a fun physical game to watch. ASU will definitely have to step it up, and hopefully, you know, they can come out a little bit more confident and a little more prepared than they did that first meeting with Stanford.
Well, and you look to David Shaw pointed out, he thought Trent Murphy deserved Defensive Player of the Year consideration rather than Will Sutton getting it. I see his point. You've got to protect your own player. And Trent Murphy had a terrific season. I look at him and I see somebody that when ASU played them the first time up there, Jake, Trent Murphy and Shane Scove, they couldn't handle the two of them. And I see Taylor Kelly and his ability to get away reminds me of you at times. Can he do that against guys like Scove and Murphy?
Well, I mean, yeah, he can, and he's going to have to. You know, those guys that you mentioned, Scove and Murphy, are very good. Morrow's another big guy in there for Stanford that he eats up space. And the main thing for ASU's offense is that they got to find a way to continue running the ball well, whether it's Taylor keeping it on, you know, the zone read or giving it to DJ Foster. I mean, they're going to have to stay in manageable situations. And when Taylor Kelly gets out and runs and makes yardage with his legs, they're a very deadly offense, and they rarely lose. So it's going to be definitely a challenge for that offense. And like I said, the O-line, you know, they've stepped up their game in the last since that Stanford game. They definitely, I think they probably got an earful from all angles as far as how to protect and pass on those stunts and definitely just man up. It's going to be a tough battle up front, very physical game. And both teams are hungry for it, so you know it'll be interesting to see which side steps up. Obviously, you know, Taylor has the elusiveness back there. He's going to have to make some big plays. It's not just going to be sitting back there picking it away. Stanford's proven they can disrupt that zone read, and it's going to take a lot of patience on his part, but also, you know, make some plays that no one expected him to make.
Yeah, where were you when the Auburn game finished, the last play against Alabama?
I was on the north side of the stadium tailgating with Juan Roque and Sean Sueda, Brent Bernstein, and Pat Thompson. So there was a TV, but I wasn't watching it. I was hanging out with those guys, you know, getting caught up with them, and then I heard everybody go crazy. And what an amazing couple weeks for Auburn. I mean, wow, that's a way to end a game.
Yeah, yeah. And so you're in the parking lot. Did you, like, wander over to a TV and say, hey, what happened? Or did you see?
Well, I heard a bunch of people yelling and screaming. There was a tent kind of near us, and so I kind of walked over there and then just heard that Auburn beat Alabama. And I didn't really, at that point, I just was happy to hear that news, and I didn't need to know how. I figured I'd get to see it 100 times on SportsCenter, which I did. And what an amazing play, and the way it went down, the scenario, you know, Coach Saban fighting for one more second. Didn't know that he'd be doomed by fighting for one more second to be put back on the clock. And, you know, in the whole scheme of things, it's like offensive guys, if your offensive guys can't tackle, then what good are they? You know, I thought they're athletic. You know, go make a tackle and end the ball game. But what a What an amazing play, an amazing belief, and you know, never give up attitude by Coach Malzahn and that Auburn team.
So that one play now puts a scenario out there where it could be ASU Alabama in the Rose Bowl. Could be. If Ohio State finishes one or two, they'd play in the national title game. Michigan State would not be a part of it because they would end up with the loss. It's one scenario of many. But if I would have told you at the beginning of the season, you know, ASU could meet Alabama in the Rose Bowl, do you bought into that?
I would shake my head and be like, are you kidding me? But I think that'd be an amazing opportunity for ASU's program to face a team like Alabama and measure up, see how you stack up against really one of the best programs in a long time in college. And I'm obviously have been kind of pulling for Alabama to get out of that top ranking so we can get some new teams in there. And not that we have new teams, but it's just somebody else other than Alabama in the national title. It's looking like that's the way it's going to be. And you know, I'm excited about that. If ASU did play Alabama, you know, I think they'd match up well. That defense would play real well against Alabama's offense. And for the offense for ASU, they'd have a challenge in facing a really great defense with Alabama's defense and C.J. Mosley in the middle. Those guys can play.
Let me throw a couple of quick hits at you. Give me 30, 45 seconds on them before we get you out of here. Marcus Mariota decides to return to school. Good decision, bad decision?
I think it's a great decision. You know, there only once in your lifetime are you in college as part of a program and a university and on a campus and trying to win a national title. Once you leave that grounds, when you're gone out of that atmosphere, you could never go back. So I'm happy to see him stay for another year and be the leader of that team. He still needs to get some, you know, he needs some work before he gets to the NFL. I think he knows that, and that's why ultimately he stayed.
If Ohio State wins and Auburn wins, does a one-loss Auburn jump Ohio State?
You know, I think so. I would say yes, because of the quality of wins Auburn had, and especially beating Alabama. But, you know, I don't know what the computers are doing. I don't know what my computer's thinking right now. It does what it wants. So you never know. You know, I would like to see Auburn get into that game just because of their dramatic season and what they've gone through and how crazy of an ending would that be to make it to the national title game and to play FSU. And, you know, we'll see. You know, Duke could beat FSU. I'm not quite convinced that can't happen. I'm excited to see that matchup. I mean, here's a basketball university ranked 24th, getting ready to play FSU. I mean, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Duke Blue Devils, now we're talking football. So you got to love that, and hopefully they'll give FSU a good game.
I'll let you go off that. We'll see. Are you coming to the game Saturday?
I can't make it this Saturday. No, just 2 weeks in a row is a little rough with the youngins, but I'll be watching. I'm going to be glued to the set and pouring all my energy and belief that they can get it done, hoping they can pull this one out.
Yeah, you got to save your brownie points for Pasadena if that happens, or the
exactly.
Holiday Bowl. Either
you're
way.
On it, man.
Yeah, I know. I got you. I got kids, too. I know where you're at. Stay well. Appreciate your time, as always.
Hey, thanks, Brad. You take it easy, man.
You got it. Jake Plummer with us every week. Jake Plummer and the Fiesta Boy, winning combination. Jake Plummer exclusively throughout the season right here with us, Sports360AZ.com. On the other side, all things NFL with Clark Judge. We shift from the college game to the pro game. Getting ready for all the games starting tonight. And some off-the-field stuff with Clark, too, with Mike Tomlin, the $100,000 fine. Bruce Arians upset with the officiating. I feel like I'm redundant with Clark on how bad the officiating has been and how the NFL has been disappointing to me this season. We'll get into some other things as well with Clark. Judge Brock Huer joins us in hour number two, ESPN college football analyst. It's all right here, sports360az.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. Brad Sussmat with you, sports360az.com, and of course on Twitter at Brad Sussmat, White Mountain Radio as well. Tomorrow we'll be doing the show over at ASU at Wells Fargo Arena with all the students. The students have actually been camping out since Monday for the Pac-12 championship game. It's supposed to be cold. It's supposed to be miserable. I'm giving away a pair of tickets at the 50-yard line, about 30 rows up today. Tomorrow the show out there. We'll screw around. We'll get knocked off the air a few times. It's what it's all about. It's college football. And then the Pac-12 title game on Saturday. Sunday, the Cardinals, barely alive, I think, in the playoffs, even with a good record. If they were over in the AFC, they'd be right in the thick of things. All of things NFL now with Clark Judge, 30 years covering the National Football League. And let's start with, you want to go with Tomlin first and the fine? I feel like every week I'm talking to you about officials. or on the field where we're starting to get to that point of the season where a game like Carolina, New Orleans at the start of the year, who knew, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. New Orleans we knew about, but we didn't know about Carolina, and they're the hottest team in football, and I think you look at them now and say, why not Carolina? I mean, the way they're playing, their defense is so good, and plus you look at that performance Monday night by New Orleans, boy, they were awful. Or look at it another way, Seattle was terrific, one of the two, but you've got the Saints back at home, and Drew Brees doesn't lose there. And they're coming off a really bad and stinging loss. Plus, you know, they were held to one touchdown. When's the last time Drew Brees has been held to, let's say, one or two touchdowns in consecutive games? It's been a long time, Brad. So I like New Orleans in this game, but I'll tell you, I'm really impressed with Carolina. You'd asked me about them in midseason. I sort of dusted them off and said, don't worry about them. Well, yeah. Now you better worry about them. I was wrong.
That was one of those coaching changes early in the season. They played out here. Carolina played out here in, I think it was late September, early October, and they looked awful. And Cam Newton looked awful. And now all of a sudden you see Cam Newton, while Kaepernick was getting beat on nationally in the middle of the season, he's starting to come back. Cam Newton, I think, has elevated his game to a level that nobody knew he had.
Yeah, he has. I mean, he's looking like the Cam Newton of his rookie year, but with a difference. When we talked about the Panthers then, or when we talked about them last year, what did we talk about? Cam Newton and nothing else. Maybe it's D'Angelo Williams or Jonathan Stewart. Basically, it was Cam Newton. Maybe Steve Smith as well, but nothing on defense. And now what are we talking about? Defense and Cam Newton. And their defense is what's making this team go. I mean, they're holding opponents fewer points than anybody in the league, something like 13 a game. And that's why I look at this game and say, you're going to hold Drew Brees to 13 at home? I don't think so. So Cam Newton's going to have to produce here. He's won his last two against New Orleans, but he's going to be under fire here. This, to me, is a real test, a litmus test of the Panthers, because I know New Orleans is a playoff-caliber team. I know that. But I don't know about Carolina in terms of how deep it can go. They're certainly hot. But, you know, this game, I will tell you, Brad, I think this game's more important to New Orleans than it is to Carolina for this reason. The dome team. And dome teams that are wild card teams are dead teams. They don't go anywhere. New Orleans has to win that division. So I think there's a sense of urgency there for the Saints.
Yeah, Drew Brees bristled at that notion Monday night about you guys can't play outdoors, but it's a fact. Okay. You can be the leader all you want, Drew Brees, which is fine. And I like Drew Brees, but the numbers don't lie. You got destroyed outdoors. If you play outdoors in the postseason, if you have to go back to Seattle, you're not going to the Super Bowl. I'm sorry.
Yeah, a few teams are. I mean, that's a tough place to win, but you're right about dome teams. Look at the history of dome teams in conference championship games. I'm not talking about New Orleans. I'm talking about dome teams, period. They don't go to the Super Bowl in outdoor venues. They've got to be at home. They've got to be playing home or in a dome. For instance, when Minnesota played New Orleans for the conference championship in 2009, I guess it was. That was two dome teams playing where they were comfortable, inside. When they have to go outside, like Minnesota did in 2000, they had a vastly better team than the Giants that year. You go outside the Giants Stadium, kaboom, that's it. They don't win. They got destroyed. So that's what happens. Dome teams, when they go outside, especially in championship games, adios.
Are you ready to say it's going to be Denver and Seattle?
No.
In the Super Bowl. I am not, and here's why. Last year at this time, everybody was saying it's Denver. There's going to be a team, and I don't know who it is, Clark. There's going to be some team that gets hot. And whoever that team is in the next few weeks, it's like the Giants a couple years. You know, the Giants are supposed to be dead. Well, no, the Giants came on and went through a terrific run. I don't know if it's Kansas City. I don't think it is. I think it's Baltimore over in the AFC.
Might be.
It might be,
and I'd keep your eyes on Philadelphia in the NFC. I mean, Philadelphia's starting to get something where I sort of scoffed at them earlier this year, and now I watch them, they're pretty good. And the quarterback's not making mistakes. Suddenly look at that offense, and it's hitting on all cylinders, but it's the defense that's also a story here that gets neglected because people are talking about Foles and LeSean McCoy and DeSean Jackson. Defense hasn't allowed more than 21 points in 8 straight games. They're beginning to play the kind of defense they need to get to the next level. Now, I mean, do they have a franchise quarterback? No, but they've got a very good young quarterback. Plus, their season finale, Brad, is against the Dallas Cowboys. It's down there in Dallas. And I want to remind you of that, keep this in mind, because of this reason. The last 2 years, what do we know about Dallas? It went into the season finale with a chance to win the division championship. And what do we also know? Not only did they lose, but Tony Romo turned the ball over 5 times in those games. And in 2008, the season finale in Philadelphia, also had a chance to make the playoffs. They didn't. They got destroyed by the Eagles 44-6. So they're not good in season enders. Philadelphia's got a chance now to win that division and I think do some damage. Another team I'd mention also is Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati has got the personnel. They certainly don't have the history. I think the last time they won a playoff game was 1991, but I'd keep my eyes on Cincinnati. I think they're starting to build something as well.
Yeah, the game Sunday, Indianapolis-Cincinnati, really good game to keep an eye on. I don't know where the Colts are going here with all the injuries that they've had, no playmaker with Reggie Wayne. They look to me like a team that doesn't have much in the tank if they do make the playoffs. They probably will, but I think the Bengals, that's a good call on your part.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on Indianapolis. I think Indianapolis is dead in the water. They can't beat anyone but Tennessee these days. You know, I know they beat Houston, but it had to come from 18 down against the worst team in the league. And another team that seems to have hit the wall is Kansas City. Kansas City is going to make the playoffs as well, but look at what's happened the last 3 games. Their defense is hemorrhaging yards and points, and I acknowledge that 2 of those games are against Denver, and that happens when you play them. But last week you're up 21-7, and you can't protect that lead. You give up 28 straight points. That's a bad sign. You can't get Alex Smith in that offense into a game of tennis with anyone, and I think you're beginning to see the signs of cracks in Kansas City, and that's the way it goes. I mean, they were 2-14 last year. They've done a remarkable job. They're going to make the playoffs, but they're not going to go deep in the playoffs, and I don't think Indianapolis will either. I think Indianapolis is 1-done in the playoffs.
All things NFL with Clark Judge. He joins us every week around the National Football League. Mike Tomlin fined $100,000. Steelers could lose draft picks. Was it intentional? Wasn't it intentional? It's just another issue off the field, in my mind, in a season that has had way too many. We had officials not knowing if it was fourth down or first down over the weekend. What do we make out of all this?
Well, sort of like Santana Moss said yesterday, it's not real good officiating. He said it's the worst officiating he's seen in his tenure as a wide receiver in the NFL. I don't know that it's the worst, but it's not very good. We've had a ton of off-season issues, and it hasn't been a good year for the NFL. They've had about as good a year as Geno Smith.
Ooh.
And I look at what's going on with Mike Tomlin, and you know, I look at this as, I don't know, I must be missing something here, Brad, because I understand he's got to get fined, all right? He stepped on the field, he's got to get fined. But $100,000, I mean, it does speak to intent. Do we know that he intentionally did that? Because what we see in film clips, if you'd agree with me, is every time we watch that on TV, he steps on the field, what's the next thing you see? A clip of him smiling, looking at the scoreboard. Well, I don't know why he's smiling. I mean, the implication is that he's laughing that he got away with one. I don't know that. I don't
right.
know if the NFL knows that. No one knows except for Mike Tomlin. Now they're talking about a possible forfeiture of draft picks. Come on. I mean, listen, you made your point. They're not going to step on the field. $100,000 gets the message across. But you need to move forward. And if they forfeit draft picks, you're going to keep this in the public's eye for a while. And I think you need people to focus on the games. The problem is, the officials can't get the games right. You look at the end of that New England game, and that was a joke, too, with the Gronkowski non-call in the end zone. I don't know what's happening in terms of the officiating. Dean Blandino, I've known for years, and he's competent. He's done a good job in terms of getting this thing together, but his officials have not been very good this year.
And what can you do about that?
Well, you can only try to, you know, get them to be better, and I know what Mike Carrera did there. He graded them each week, which they do. I mean, they do that each week, and they have a system where they promote certain guys and downgrade certain guys based on their performance. And honestly, that crew on Monday night will be downgraded. They're not going to go to the playoffs because that's a second instance for them. So I look at what Dean Blandino is doing with these officials, and as I said, he worked with Mike. I think that's the only thing you can do. I mean, people say, well, the solution's full-time officials. I don't think that's the case. They're getting most of the calls right, but, boy, they're making some real screw-ups in prime-time games, so we're all seeing them.
But it needs
to be minimized. I don't know what you can do other than simply schooling them again and again and penalizing those who are guilty.
Why couldn't you make it, though, where this is the only thing that they do? Why can't you
Well, you could. I mean, you could. That's what they do in baseball. But
yeah.
I think, you know, it's... I've talked to Mike for a long time about this. He's adamant against it as well. I don't think it's necessary because, honestly, I do think, by and large, they do a pretty good job. As he mentioned, they get 98% of the calls right. And he said that 2% is still, that's not good enough. We need to minimize that. But I don't think making them full-time is going to correct that. And I sort of agree with him. I think that these guys do enough work that, you know, that call on or non-call on Monday night, that could happen. I mean, this you had a head linesman who was saying, first down, and according to the referee, Jeff Triplett, he was saying, well, no, I was saying that it was not a first down. Well, I don't know who's saying what, but somebody told Mike Shanahan, you got a first down. I do think it was the head linesman. The fact that he's full-time, is he not going to do that? I don't know the answer to that. I think they've got the thing where it's good. It needs to be better. Certainly needs to be better this year. This is another down season. Eventually that conversation is going to come up again if this continues, but it's got to be dealt with immediately. And as I said, I think you penalize these guys.
I hate to be so negative with you on this, but...
Yeah, you are.
However,
no, I understand where you're coming from because, I mean, we had the Trent Williams situation, you know, a week or so ago, or 2 weeks ago, where an official's joined with an offensive lineman, and he gets suspended. The official gets suspended,
yeah.
as he should have. I mean, you're not supposed to get in that conversation with a player. But each week, I mean, we've got something in front of us. They need to stop that. But, you know, we've got off-the-field issues elsewhere, too. I mean, the incognito situation. Talking about the Tomlin situation. I mean, there's an awful lot that's going on here, and I think part of it, Brad, is because, you know, the increased exposure. We've seen a lot more games, and we're talking a lot more about them because we're exposed to them.
No, I get that. I get that. What is the weather forecast for Super Bowl Sunday? Have they started doing that yet back in New York? Have they started the countdown?
I haven't looked that far in advance. All I know is what the Farmer's Almanac is predicting, and they are predicting a snowstorm for that weekend.
I'll let you go off that. I'll talk to you next week. Thanks.
Yeah, more good news for the NFL, Brad.
Right. That's what I'm getting at. There's Clark Judge, all things around the National Football League. Appreciate Clark being with us every week. 30 years covering the NFL. Great insight from one of the really good people, Pro Football Hall of Fame voter, Clark Judge, there with us on the show. On the other side, so there's an angle around this Arizona State-Stanford game I want to get back to, and it involves some of the players on the Stanford roster that played their high school games and days right here in the Valley and that left. One of them is going to be a top 10 draft pick overall. One of the big issues facing Todd Graham is, can you start to keep some of these kids at home? Much more around the game, ASU and Stanford. If you have not heard, as today progresses into tonight, I have a pair of tickets to Saturday night's Pac-12 championship game between ASU and Stanford. They are in Section 7, which is at the 50-yard line. They are about 30 rows up. I have a pair of them. All you have to do is go to my Twitter page, @BradSusmat, or go to sports360az.com, or go to Facebook. And there's three different ways for you to get involved in that. That's all there for you. I'm Brad Susmat, sports360az.com, White Mountain Radio. So the big story here in the middle of the day, Jameis Winston press conference coming up at Florida State. What is going to be announced? Jameis Winston and his attorney will have a response at 12:30. We will learn if he will be charged with sexual battery and the alleged rape of a fellow student. 3 weeks of national scrutiny that I think has turned into a he said versus she said. Brad Sussmat with you. This segment of the show brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. I'm driving the 2013 Ford Fusion, the hybrid. I'm getting over 43 miles to the gallon. I was out in California last week. You know when you go down a hill, and it's a really long, steep hill? I'm going down I-10, and I'm driving on down. I take my foot off the pedal, and I see my miles per gallon go up, 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 where I was over 50 miles a gallon because I was just cruising. I was just coasting. For me, very economical, makes a ton of sense for what I do with all the driving. I'm in business meetings. I'm at speaking engagements. When I'm done here today, I've got a speaking engagement here, a business meeting there. I've got to go to Maricopa tonight to MC an event. I've got to be at Avita tonight in Tempe. I do a lot of miles today. I do a lot of driving. The Fusion Hybrid makes a lot of sense for me. Now, how about you? Can you say that with all certainty that you're in the vehicle that gets you around, that you're comfortable, and that makes the most sense for your family? Stop on into Santan Ford. General Manager Tim Hovick, a huge Cardinal fan, huge ASU fan, Diamondback fans, not just fans. He's a big sponsor for all of them as well. He's really into the sports scene. That's where you need to do your business for the next car, that next truck. That's at Santan Ford, Santan Ford, where it is all about you. So what do I do with my Heisman ballot? Because I've got a vote, and it's got to be turned in by Monday. How much do I weigh in this Jameis Winston story? I believe that as this has gone on, it's turned into a he said, she said. I really do believe that. The DNA came back that there was a 100,000% chance it was him. I mean, some crazy number that the two of them had sex, okay? It took over a year for this story to become public. In the last year, Jameis Winston has evolved into this big-time college future NFL star who's on the Heisman Trophy. I've got two daughters, so I'm sensitive whenever the words rape is mentioned. It's been over a year now. Whatever is said today, whether it was he said, she said, or he's charged, what do I do with my ballot? If he's charged, that's pretty easy for me. That's pretty easy. He's not getting my vote. Is he the best player that I've seen at the position, actually on the field this year, and done the most for his team this year? That's my way of looking at the Heisman Trophy. Yes, he has. There's no question. So even though he's been in the middle of this, I don't even know how to term it, this middle, now I won't say controversy, it's been a legal investigation. He's been in the middle of an investigation. If the investigation turns out that it's she said, he said, it's two people that had sex. So I'm supposed to hold my Heisman ballot back because of that. I don't see that as being a rational way of thinking. There's people that have said, well, I can't vote for him because he's just gotten in the middle of this mess. Well, if he's charged, yeah, there's no question. If he's not charged, I don't see where you don't give him your vote this year. There's nobody else that's come close. Eric, is there anybody else that you'd even sniff at saying as a Heisman Trophy candidate this year?
Well, you know my opinion on A.J. McCarron, so it's, I would say...
But A.J. McCarron Saturday, A.J. McCarron wasn't good against Auburn.
He was good against Auburn.
He wasn't good enough.
He makes the biggest plays in the biggest games. He put his team in position to win the Iron Bowl. What happened to him was not his fault. Same can be said for Johnny Manziel. He's not going to win it, but guess what? His defense is so bad, it's taken the shine off of the A&M season because their defense can't stop anybody. So right now, to answer your question, I don't really know.
If Winston is charged, where do I go with a vote?
Braxton Miller?
See, I think Braxton
Miller...
And I say that
with a question mark.
Sure, in the tone of your voice, you don't say that with conviction.
I don't.
Like you say A.J. McCarron with conviction.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. He can't play. Oh, his offensive line isn't good. Well, guess what? He had another great season. Oh, he's surrounded by great players. Well, guess what? He's won 2 BCS championships.
The team has.
Just saying.
All right.
Just saying. He's the quarterback on the best team in the country. Not this year.
I cannot see Andre Williams at Boston College being somebody that I'm voting for.
Like
I'd vote for Kadeem Carey before I'd vote for Andre Williams.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question.
I would agree with that.
So there's that on my mind. There's this story, too. There's a couple stories around ASU and Stanford. One is how many very good high school players have left the state of Arizona to go play for Stanford. If you think about it and go through the list of guys that have been here, Trent Murphy's going to be a top 10 pick. He played at Brophy. Andres Pete will be a top 10 pick whenever he comes out from Corona del Sol. Devin Carrington was a terrific corner safety for Steve Bellis over at Hamilton. Zach Hoffpar at Centennial has been very good. He's playing nickel for them right now. Here's Zach Hoffpar on Playing the Game in Arizona, knowing so many of these players across from him on Saturday night.
It's always good to go home and just be in a familiar area. Hopefully a lot of my friends are able to come to the game, get to see my family, and they don't have to make a trip somewhere to go watch me play. So it's pretty exciting.
He will see some familiar faces on the field on Saturday, guys he competed with in high school.
A couple guys, DJ Foster, Jackson Hood, those are a couple guys in my class that I grew close to throughout the recruiting process and stuff, so it's fun to play against them.
He will try to contain DJ Foster. That's going to be the big matchup Saturday night. ASU's offense with DJ Foster, running back for the injured Marion Grice against Stanford.
He's a great player. I mean, you watch him on film. He's everywhere on the field. They move him all around, kind of like a Swiss Army knife type guy. Real tough. Has a great attitude when he's out there. Just an all-around good player.
It's Zach Hoffpar. So there's that's going on. Did you see Lane Kiffin's house was put on the market? Did you see that story today?
I did not.
So former USC head football coach Lane Kiffin's house put on the market. Now, there are those of you that are in your humble little abode. How much do you think Lane Kiffin's house went for on the market?
3-point fill in the blank?
Higher.
5-point fill in the blank?
Higher.
I have no idea.
How about $6.995 million? This is a football coach.
Marina Del Rey?
Manhattan Beach.
Close enough.
Manhattan Beach. So here's a football coach who has to oversee young men, as they like to say. Student athletes, as they like to say. I don't know. Try maybe half that, a little less than that. I mean, he's not even in his 40s yet. He's like in his late 30s. $6.9 million house to be a college football coach at SC. I suppose you have to have you've got to impress everybody. I mean, we got to downsize into the $3 million house. Come on. What are you talking about? And probably for $6.9 million in Manhattan Beach, it's a box that he's living in. And he has no driveway, right? He has no view. He reaches over the fence to hand off sugar cubes to his neighbor. I like that story a little bit too. Washington is looking for their new football coach. There are reports here in the middle of the day that this may finally be the time that Chris Peterson finally leaves Boise State and goes to UW, goes to Washington. If that is the case, then that's a game changer, I think, for down here, for Todd Graham and recruiting players. I like Chris Peterson. Chris Peterson, Boise State's come here to Arizona, is taking kids away. So there's that story that's happening in the middle of the day as well. Wherever you're listening to us, however you're taking in the show today, you could be in bed with a stomach flu, taking it in today. You could be just miserable today, the worst ever. Don't be around little kids and get the stomach flu. You could be at work taking this in. You're an ASU fan taking it. We appreciate you being with us. You can always follow me on Twitter, at Brad Cesmat, C-E-S-M-A-T. My Facebook page, Brad Cesmat. And, of course, our website, sports360az.com. You can consume it in all sorts of different ways. Over on sports360az.com right now, plenty of content. Eric and Jared, myself, have been writing, doing videos, all sorts of stuff around the ASU and Stanford matchup. If you want some unique content, different voices that have been on throughout the week, just go on over to sports360az.com. I'm Brad Cesmat. Off we go in hour number two, Brad Cesmat, sports360az.com, on White Mountain Radio, on Twitter, at Brad Cesmat, C-E-S-M-A-T. We have our Facebook question of the day that Eric has up for you, if you have not jumped in on that today, as ASU students are camping out at Wells Fargo Arena for great seats, Saturday's Pac-12 title game. Across the town, Arcadia Tents have filled a Chick-fil-A parking lot in hopes of winning a free food prize for a year.
Woohoo!
This is Eric's question. What's the craziest thing you've done for great seats and or a great deal? Head over to facebook.com/sports360. It doesn't have to be a sports deal. It could be concert tickets, whatever. And Brock Heard's going to join us here in a couple of minutes, ESPN college football analyst. We're going to talk about the showdown in Tempe, and they're not many better than Brock. They really aren't. That list is easy. So I think the outrage over the field at ASU, when I first heard about this story on Monday, that the Pac-12 office was not going to let Sun Devil Stadium do the usual ASU hometown deal where the fireworks go off, where Sparky stomps on the bus, and all of that. There are people in town that are really upset by that. Here's my thing. On one hand, I understand what the Pac-12 is saying because it's supposed to be a neutral site. I think they're missing a tremendous opportunity to turn it into one big party. Have Stanford do what they do. This cannot be that hard. I don't know what Stanford does on their video boards. I don't know what Stanford does on their video boards. But whatever they do, duplicate it down here. I know what ASU does on their video boards. Duplicate it down here. When Stanford runs out on the field, have the Stanford band and all that do their thing. When ASU runs out on the field, have it be the same way. When Stanford scores a touchdown, play the sound of the train horn that they have up at Stanford. Somebody with a cassette tape recorder, I'm sure, could figure out a way, a reel-to-reel or something, to get the sound effect of the train that Stanford uses. It's not that hard. It really isn't. Turn it into a festive environment with both schools. I don't care that they have a bank sponsor that isn't even a bank in Arizona. There's a bank sponsor for the Pac-12. I don't get paid to say who's sponsored, so I'm not going to say it. But there's a bank sponsor that I saw is plastered all over Sun Devil Stadium. There's nobody goes to bank at that bank because it's not here in Arizona. I understand. So people are all wound up about that. There's more important things to be sure, but this isn't one of those deals that is a game changer. I think the Pac-12 should be open-minded and have a little bit more fun. How does your team run out onto the field? Well, we have smoke and we have fireworks. Okay, so you need smoke and fireworks, done deal. How does your team run out on the field? We have smoke and we have fireworks. Okay, we'll put some smoke and we'll put some fireworks out there. This isn't splitting atoms. It's sports. There's a lot of that people are talking about. Eric, did you see U of A is going to be number one in basketball now? Last night,
As long as they take care of UNLV.
They should. Michigan State, number one team in the land, lost last night to North Carolina. So U of A will be number one in hoops, and I think they're the best team I've seen so far this season. The Suns really surprised me last night, beating up on Houston. James Harden was brutal. James Harden was awful. 14 points, 3 of 17 shooting, 0 of 10 from three-point country. The Suns, behind Dragic and Bledsoe, they win in that one. On the Cardinals front, they get ready for a matchup with St. Louis. This is a big game. It's a big game. And so we're looking forward to that and some of what is on my mind in the world of sports. We're joined now by Brock Huard. Brock Huard, ESPN college football analyst. Always good to catch up with Brock Huard at a time where he's got nothing going on. Let's see, you had the Monday night game, Seattle, New Orleans. You have Cano being talked about for the M's. You have the coaching move. Well, you got nothing going on right now.
No. This feels a lot like the All-Star break in July, doesn't it? I mean, nothing going on. You got to make up your own news. Yeah, this has been a really, really difficult work week. I've come home just absolutely exhausted, feet up on the couch. My right. wife, taking great care of me this week. No, this is easy. These are the weeks that you live for. The Seahawks up here, Brad. It's like nothing I've ever experienced. I actually went to the game Monday night. It was so nice to actually take my wife to the game. And I hope at some point in your life that you can experience CenturyLink Field when it's full throat, when it's a playoff game, when it's Sunday or Monday night primetime game. Because in all of my 37 years and about 20 years of playing football and in lots of different stadiums and lots of environments, there just is simply nothing quite like the connection between team and fan base that you have here in Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, I've been there when it's 58-0 Seattle, so that was a little different last year. So I kind of get
Yeah, that wasn't a real competitive environment that
no,
day.
No, not at all. All right, let's get right into this. Serious note here. Stanford ASU Pac-12 title game. Are you surprised by this matchup to decide the Pac-12?
I'm a little bit. I was probably the biggest surprise this year, Brad, is just how the train came off the tracks with the University of Oregon and how by year's end, and boy, they were beaten down and just physically, mentally, maybe even emotionally more than in any other way, were just not anywhere near what they had been with the swagger and the bravado and some of that confidence that Chip Kelly had brought. They were kind of like Drago in Rocky IV. After he get cut, he's not a machine. He does bleed, and then you got some folks like D'Anthony talking about the Rose Bowl not being that big a deal and just some of the level of dysfunction and then the disrepair on the field. To me, maybe that was the biggest surprise of all. The fact that Stanford was there in the end, not a surprise. And in the Pac-12 South, we talked about it a bunch throughout the season. It was going to be a wild race. Who could put it together the quickest? Who could do it the most consistently? And a real credit to Todd Graham and what the Sun Devils have done down the stretch to be playing their best ball when it's most important to.
I remember you and I talking last year. ASU played Illinois, and you did that game. And when you sat in the meetings with Todd Graham, he wasn't really going to say a whole heck of a lot. Are you surprised with Todd Graham, Coach of the Year, the success that he's had down here? Or is it a little bit of it's with Dennis Erickson's players?
No, he was going to say a lot, Brad. He was just going to say a lot of what he wanted to say. So he wasn't gonna, there's a difference there. It was a good 20-minute filibuster, and he was going to make sure that he got out what he wanted out, and understandably so at that point. That was very early in his in his beginnings there, and the track record and the resume was what it was. So he was, I think, trying to change some of that image and perception, and most importantly, he's done that on the field. I mean, he's shown you why he's had success everywhere he has been. no, I don't sit here and look at this in any way that this is Dennis Erickson's team and his recruits. I mean, their style of play, their brand of football, what they're doing is so vastly different than the previous regime. No, this is all Todd Graham. This is a tremendous staff. I think I told you after that game how impressed I was with the people that he surrounded himself with, and that doesn't get near enough credit. And, you know, the University of Washington is here in a coaching search, and Sark's going to go to USC. And who can you surround yourself with as recruiters, as really good coaches? Can you keep those coaches there? Can you pay them appropriately? And that will be some of the challenge now, especially on the offensive side of the ball with the success they've had. Will he have to replace his offensive coordinator as he goes on to be a head coach? So, no, I am not shocked at what he's done. For anybody to diminish it and say that, well, this is Dennis's team, yeah, I think you're missing the boat there. This is his team, it's his brand, it's his system, and it's flourishing right now.
Here's the narrative on Todd Graham, we're talking with Brock here, that I see and hear down here. Okay, so he's been able to turn Arizona State around. Somebody's going to come along and grab him, like Steve Patterson left his AD here and went to Texas. Do you see Todd Graham and Arizona State as a long-term relationship up in the Pacific Northwest?
Yeah, that's going to be a bit of a challenge, I think, if the SEC comes calling, you know, and just based on, you know, more of his track record. That's all you can go on at this point, and a willingness to go and to jump ship and continue to aspire and to climb, much like Sarkisian here. And I don't have real bitterness or resentment for Steve, and I don't think the majority of the Husky fans do. Now, the very vocal minority and the fanatics are upset with that, but, you know, he landed one of the plum jobs in college football, a place that was home to him, and he had a lot of success. So if a school out of the SEC comes, or somebody wants to double his pay or something of that nature, you know, I would hope that most fans wouldn't begrudge it. And, you know, I think for Todd Graham, and I don't read every commentary and everything he said throughout this process, but I hope he would be unlike some of the coaches that I come across in college football that will say to me, oh, this is my dream job. Oh, this is where I've always wanted to be. Oh, this is my dream job. I'd be very, very careful of that, because I think there are very few opportunities where that is actually true. And when you put that out there and those things go out and they are in print or they are said over the air, that's some dangerous water. So hopefully, and, you know, he's a smart, shrewd enough guy. He's kind of learned over his last few years in destination. He's not saying anything like that, because that's what infuriates maybe people the most, is some of that double talk.
A couple other questions. We'll let Brock here go. Appreciate his time. As always, ESPN college football analyst with Brad Sussmat. You break it down, X and O. I was at Stanford ASU, and Stanford just physically mauled them. Much bigger. Scove and Murphy harassed Taylor Kelly, made some poor decisions. But this is now almost three months later. What do you see X and O Stanford ASU on Saturday night?
Yeah, this is all about volume of snaps. I think that's what it completely comes down to. And can ASU get the numbers and the volume that they need that they could not get there in the Bay Area, where you're right? And I remember talking to you, I think, after that week of just how physically manhandled, how it looked like a varsity versus JV team from just a manhood standpoint. But I think you also got Stanford at their very, very peak of health and their very, very peak of their personnel. Obviously, Ben Gardner is gone. That diminishes somewhat some of their depth in their front. It is still a career that if you can get the volume of plays, is a significantly step backwards when the number twos come in the ball game. So you tell me what the ideal number of plays. Can they get to 80 plays? If they get to 80 plays, I think ASU wins. If they're at 60 plays, well, then I think some of what Stanford does and their ability to possess the ball and their ability to slow down some of that tempo that ASU loves to play with. So to me, that's going to be the critical number. Just how many snaps can Taylor and crew get offensively?
Before I let you go, where are you at on this whole Auburn-Missouri jumping Ohio State debate? Because I'll give you the view down here. If ASU wins and if Michigan State beats Ohio State, it's Michigan State ASU in the Rose Bowl. If Ohio State wins, it could be Alabama ASU in the Rose Bowl, believe it or not. But do you see a one-loss team jumping over Ohio State?
I sure hope not. I mean, I really think that would be a very poor precedent. And said, you know, I would never do that. I could never possibly, as a voter, look at that. Auburn lost. Okay, Auburn lost to a four-loss LSU team, three-loss LSU
team. They were
down
21 in that game, too.
LSU team, it's not what they've been in the past. And they started really slow, barely beat Washington State, but they got a loss. I mean, that happened. Missouri could not finish against South Carolina up 17 in the fourth. They've got a loss. Ohio State, if they can beat a really good Michigan State team, will not, and they will not have had a loss in 25 games. Now, I don't put the 13 ahead of it. It's this 12, and it's this grouping right here. But if I'm a voter, there is no way in the world that I want to set a precedent of a one-loss team jumping an undefeated team from a power conference. It's never happened. I don't think it will.
Let you go off that. Appreciate your time and insight. As always, safe travels.
Have fun. I bet that venue is going to be rocking and rolling Saturday. So have a great time, Brad.